Good afternoon. This is Natalie here at Weymouth College, and joining me today I have Amelia Hooley from Dorset Mind, who is a training and partnerships coordinator. And discussing today, we are looking at wellbeing in the workplace with a key focus for episode two around mental health, the impact that we've experienced as a result of 2020 and the global pandemic, and with the main focus to look at making sure that we can learn from that and the impact that we've had and the experience that we've had with that, and see how we could move forward and take some of those learnings from last year forward. So Amelia, thank you so much for joining me today.
That's a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's really, really important at the moment to have these conversations around mental health. So we're really grateful, and I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you. And like you said, it's so important. I think we both agree in sort of our briefings, our communications, the times that we've had talking before, that mental health is an area of, you know, sort of national sort of focus, or should be national focus before the pandemic. But certainly we've seen an increase of awareness and a certain increase in need to have topic conversations, you know, like this as a result of the pandemic. And I think to start us off, if you wouldn't mind, you've kindly pulled together some stats and some research around mental health well-being and sort of the impact of the last 12 months. Would you mind talking us through some of the impact that the global pandemic has had on sort of health and well-being and mental health specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just wanted to pick up your point about how the pandemic has really affected people, and is so important. But for us at Dorset Mind, it's about kind of continuing that conversation. So not just about the pandemic, like you say, but really kind of pushing forwards and making it a part of everyday conversation. But yeah, so generally, I realise this is about businesses, but I think it's really important to just give kind of an overview. So we've had some research passed on to us, and up to 10 million people, which is almost a fifth of the population, will either need new or additional mental health support as a direct consequence of COVID-19. So that in itself is a massive stat, and it's something that I hope people will kind of sit back and really contemplate. And 70 to 75% of people with a mental health problem receive no support. And there's various reasons for that, but predominantly it's the stigma attached to mental health and actually being able to talk about it. But within the workplace, it's really important to kind of sit back and consider these sort of stats as well. So on average, people who are working full time, they are working an estimated extra 29 hours per month. So that's nearly a week extra per month that people are trying to fit into four weeks. And the biggest single contributor for mental health has been loneliness and isolation. And we kind of feel that that's possibly a big contributor. So people working from home, which is linked into the always on culture, which we'll kind of, I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but leverism and the always on culture, which is enabled by technology, which is fantastic, but people are kind of resorting to that technology and not taking the time out for themselves.
Thank you. No, I think those statistics are incredibly important and shocking. I mean, another week inside a month already, and you know, the idea that 10 million people will need support or continued support is again quite eye-opening of the impact and how this need in our society and in our country has sort of, you know, developed and certainly evolved with additional sort of pressures of last year. You've mentioned some sort of key contributing factors that might sort of support those statistics or be the reasons around it. And I think to start us off, there has been huge change in our working ways and our working capacity and sort of things over the last year. One, you know, remote working, people obviously furloughed, facing risks, you know, lots of external influencing factors that are going to contribute to that. But you mentioned as well there about the always on culture, which I think is a huge focus for those people that are working from home. And I would imagine that links to sort of not being able to sort of do as much when we're inside of lockdown, and you know, having technology accessible and work always quite accessible at home. Are they the kind of things that sort of create that always on culture?
Yeah, absolutely. So what a term that we kind of use quite a lot at the moment is called leverism. And it's actually a term that describes the growing tendency of individuals within the workplace. The tendency is not to be able to switch off from work. So we have found, you've touched on it really well, but we've really found that it's great for a lot of people to be able to work remotely. They save time on the commute, they save time on petrol money, things like that, which is brilliant. However, people are working at home, they're not able to work in the office. They don't have the boundary between the office and their home working life. And what they're doing is they're working in a room. Quite often it's the lounge. And that's normally that kind of their sanctuary, for want of another word. And they don't have that boundary. And that's where the all-on culture kind of comes in, because people kind of feel like, oh, I'll just check that email at 10 o'clock at night, or I'll just try and get on top of my emails at work a little bit later. And as a result of that, there is burnout, which we'll kind of touch on a little bit more, but it's a really common problem. But also I think people feeling that if they kind of feel like sometimes their bosses are, they're not able to leave their desk because their bosses are going to be checking up on them. So to go and get a cup of tea, if you did that in the office, it's okay to walk past the desk of a colleague and have a really quick conversation. But at home, there's always this guilt of kind of leaving your desk and actually having 5 minutes out, or taking time out to go for a walk at lunchtime. So it's the fact that people are just working longer and harder, they feel their job is under scrutiny. A lot of people, if they're going on to furlough or there's that threat of redundancy, a lot of businesses are being affected at the moment by what's going on. Excuse me. So they are feeling like there's increased demands and pressures there to kind of perform and to perform at a higher level. But linked in with this is something called presenteeism. Mm-hmm. And presenteeism it's defined as attending work whilst ill, and therefore not being able to perform at their full ability. So it can be positive and negative, and it can be down to a number of factors, but actually it's really, really worrying how many people will call up sick for a different reason other than mental health and struggling with stress and anxiety and burnout. And I think the stat is something like 95% of people give another reason for calling in ill rather than saying they're really struggling and they need some help. So we need to kind of think about that and really focus on that going forwards.
No, you know, absolutely. And I think it comes back to a point you made at the very beginning of this around having to sort of try and challenge some stigma still. And I think from a mental health point of view, as a country, as a nation, as a culture, there has been huge steps taken forward over recent years, or, you know, the last 10 years or so, around campaigners and people that are really trying to sort of promote talking therapies or bring mental health into the picture. But we have still got so far to go. And I think, you know, that stigma or that barrier then stops people actually saying the truth about how they feel, and it links there as well why they may give alternative reasons for their absence. If I may, Amelia, if we can just go back to the always on culture, you made some really, you know, good points there and really clear points about how that might come around, the reasons why we might be sort of working in that way. If I was a business listening to this right now, or an organisation that we hope may sort of hear this, how could we take that information, and how could we, two things, what would you suggest to try and identify that if that was happening and they could see it? And what could we do to stop that? What would be your advice around there?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a great question. And lots of people find different things work well for them. I remember when I was running my own business a few years ago, excuse me, I had a business mentor, and my mentor said to me, and it was a silly little thing, but it really worked for me. She said, write up your open and close hours. And I didn't run a shop. I ran a swim school, but I had my hours as sort of 9 to 5. And she said, when you get to that 5 o'clock, if you've got those hours in front of you, you need to get up, switch off your computer, walk out and close the door behind you. And I really kind of, I've remembered that a lot, actually, because before I was kind of working and working and working and working. And actually, even though I was working longer hours, I wasn't productive. I wasn't doing very well, you know, because I was doing too many hours. So I really think it's about boundaries. And we talk a lot about boundaries within our training courses. And it's being really clear with yourself, but also being really clear and being comfortable to kind of raise it in team meetings and with your managers about boundaries. And if you're struggling, a lot of people have increased work demand. Obviously, the impact of furlough. People are taking on additional work roles and kind of they're supporting their colleagues that may be isolating and things like that. So they've got those increases, but actually sometimes it makes it unrealistic and the expectations or deadlines are not achievable. And it's about having those conversations. So it's kind of bottom up and top to bottom. So colleagues feeling really, really comfortable to kind of speak up in a team meeting, but actually having managers checking in on people. Mm-hmm. And really checking in on people. So, you know, asking how they are, but actually sitting down and saying, well, how's it going? How are you managing your workload? How are you feeling in this environment? Are you managing to get your work done? So really kind of having those courageous conversations around mental health, we think is really important. And it kind of opens up a bit of transparency, but also creates a bit of a culture in the workplace where people can speak up and feel comfortable if they're not in a good place. So hopefully that helps.
Absolutely. And I quite agree. And we've talked in, you know, we talk with our clients or some other material that we've done about how important it is to try and bring as much of the office culture that you'd normally work with, that open door policy, that confidential space. We talk quite a lot about how we need to bring that into the virtual space as well. And so I completely agree. I think we need to bring some of those approaches into the online world, but we need to really check in with people and help to identify that and just make sure that there's clear, accessible lines of communication where people feel comfortable in sharing that as well. Not an easy thing to do. It does take people that are happy to have those conversations and feel confident and comfortable enough to be able to sort of go there. But it's so important, as you mentioned, to sort of do that. I think you mentioned as well about, I think, the access to working extended hours at the moment. And, you know, that statistic's so quite unbelievable that there's, you know, an estimated sort of working week in most people's months at the moment. But I can see it, and I can see how easily that people could fall into that. But you mentioned that actually it could be really a key contributing factor of leading to what we would term or use the phrase burnout. And it'd be really useful if from your view or from Dorset Mind, what that might mean what the term burnout means and what that could lead on to from a mental health point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. So burnout is something that we're talking about a lot at the moment, and it does. And you rightly said it links back to the all-on culture. And the additional kind of stresses that we talk about. So for us, we talk about burnout as an energy management issue. So we can beat burnout by building up helpful healing energy, but we need to reduce the draining and the negative energy. So we kind of really focus in our training about, apologies for keeping mentioning the training, but I think it's quite useful to kind of talk about these strategies. And I was going to talk a little bit more at the end, but we really kind of get delegates to focus on sustainers and drainers. So sustainers, things that kind of keep those energy levels up and the positive energy levels up. But then drainers, on the other hand, that really drain them. And the losses and gains. So really a focus on the losses and gains, which are completely individual and different from people. So for example, a loss for somebody like working at home when they prefer to work in the office, that's a loss for some people. They've got that isolation. They haven't got the interaction socially with their colleagues. They can't just kind of walk over to another desk and get some help or get some advice. They have to make a call to kind of get that. Whereas for other people working at home, they love it because they get extra time with their family. They don't need to commute. So we really kind of focus on those things. And I think it's really important for businesses and employees within those to kind of sit back and think about where they're at the moment and kind of how they can change that. And without being able to sit back and take some time out for themselves, they're never really going to understand that. So, you know, going back to kind of burnout, it's managing that energy. And some of the symptoms that we kind of focus on, it's about feeling low, feeling cynical, feeling bored, loss of compassion. It does have an impact physically, and it can affect, you know, it can give you extra pain like back pain, neck pain if you're not sleeping very well. And really it's things like you aren't excited to go to work. You only talk about work. So that's your main kind of focus. And you dream about work. So sometimes it's bad dreams, stressful dreams, people are waking up in the night and things like that. And also it can lead to things like feeling shame for your human limitations, feeling stressed, snapping at people. And unfortunately, things like drinking a lot more, gambling, taking drugs, so unhealthy coping strategies, they're a coping strategy. So it's not about taking those away straight away. It's about replacing them with positive coping strategy. And sorry, I'm going on quite a lot now, but I think what's important is kind of something we call the stress bucket. Mm-hmm. So when your stress bucket is filled up with bad stresses and negative energy, you need to find that outlet to replace that with positive energy. And I'll talk about that a little bit later, but we have really good focus on something called wellness action plans and also our five steps and five ways to well-being, which kind of make a huge difference.
Thank you very, very much for that detail of, you know, talking through the signs, the symptoms, how it may display itself and certainly where it comes from. And it likens in many senses to sort of mental exhaustion would be another way of sort of explaining that, I think. And I think sometimes we're very in tune with understanding physical exhaustion through sort of tiredness, but there just isn't the level of sort of respect or awareness, I don't think, around, again, that sort of mental exhaustion that likens itself to burnout as well. So thank you so much for sort of being so detailed with that. You've talked about some sort of coping strategies there and sort of suggestions of how both individuals or employers could support that, and it'd be really good if you could talk us through those.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to touch on a stat, which I was going to mention earlier, actually. But I just wanted to raise that 300,000 people a year lose their job to long-term mental health problems. And that starts from things like burnout, and it's not managing those in the first place. So it is so important to, and I'll go on to coping strategies and kind of really thinking about how you can feel positive about yourself. And just a really key stat as well. We talked about presenteeism and poor mental health, but poor mental health in the workplace, it costs UK employees $45 billion per year, and $29 billion of that is down to presenteeism. So if people are struggling with burnout, if they're really struggling with their mental health, they need to kind of deal with it. And there's lots of services. Obviously, Dorset Mind has great services that are available, but there's a lot of other people to talk to. You know, you've got the Samaritans, you've got Mind nationally, you've got the retreat, we've got different places that we can kind of really signpost to. So I think it's super important to just sit back in the first place and kind of assess where people are at, but also assess where their colleagues and their friends and their family are at. And it goes back to having those genuine conversations. But yeah, if I just talk a little bit more about the coping strategies that we really find work really well, one of them is called a wellness action plan. And the wellness action plan actually promotes positive, healthy behaviours. And it's not just about focusing on if you're in a bad place with your mental health. It's actually thinking about what is your mental health like when you're in a good place? What makes you happy? What makes you kind of enjoy life? What can put you back on that track, that positive track? And it's written about like yourself. So it's really personal and individual to you, and it's owned by you. And we go back to kind of talking about management, and we really encourage people to share it with their managers, because then their managers can see, okay, well, if they're struggling in this way, or if we've seen these signs, it means they're kind of deteriorating and they're not in a good place. So what can we do? What can we get them to do to kind of really focus on their mental health? And it can be things like focusing on certain colors. So some people really like yellow. So it's getting some yellow flowers, or going for a walk and trying to look for yellow when you're out and about. It can be certain songs that really kind of get you in a great mood. And we were talking about that in a meeting the other day, actually in-house meeting, and someone said they went for a walk and they just had their favorite song playing. And it was the most cheesy song in the world, but they were singing and they were dancing and they were messing around to it. And they said it was amazing. It made them feel so much better. It could be reading a book. It could be meditating. There's lots of different ways that people can kind of really pick their mental health back up. It could be creative things. It could be going out and doing some exercise. So it's really a document where you can sit and kind of reflect on where you're at when your mental health is good, and what you can do to kind of promote that. So that's kind of the first thing that we talk about. We actually have sessions where we go into businesses and we really help people create that and just give them that reflection time to put their wellness action plan in place.
That's great. And if I may just add on that, I think, you know, such a really useful thing to do. And like you say, so important to communicate with your support work, support team or group, whether that be your line manager or your colleagues. But a really useful exercise, I'm sure, for everyone to do just individually, to sort of take stock, take time to reflect and say, when everything feels so pressurized at the moment or quite restricted, or, you know, I haven't got access to the normal things that I might do, what is accessible for me at the moment that really makes me feel good? And maybe to reflect and write those down in a 5-minute task just brings it, I think, closer to people's awareness, so that people can realize that there is still, you know, joy and happiness and good, you know, good things or good things to do that are accessible to people at the moment. So I would imagine it brings it into people's focus, which is key.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, when we deliver our training, we kind of get people to reflect quite a lot and see what's happening for them in the current situation. And we have so much feedback coming back for people to be like, thank you so much, you kind of made me sit back and realize, because most of us are terrible in kind of really reflecting on realistically how we're feeling at the moment. And it's quite easy to say, you know, if someone says, how are you? It's quite easy to turn around and be like, I'm absolutely fine, even though you're not. But yeah, you don't, you just feel like, do they care? Sometimes people don't genuinely feel that other people care about them. So that just goes back to the genuine question of how are people doing? And Dorset Mind, we're quite good. And I really feel supported. But when I'm talking to my team as well, I check in and the first thing I say to them in every call is, how are you doing? And if someone's not, you can tell, you can genuinely tell if someone's not right. And I really kind of make a point of it. If someone's not as smiley that week, I kind of feel really comfortable saying to them, what's going on? If they don't want to talk about it, it's absolutely fine. But I want them to know that we genuinely care and we want them to be in a better place.
And it's being clear enough to pick up on those, you know, visual or, you know, it might even be that you can hear someone's tone of voice on the phone or something like that. And it's about being able to pick up those key things that maybe identify to us that someone's not of a good space, and giving them the safe space to sort of have those conversations, or at least signposting them maybe to someone that may be able to have that as well. So if we go back to sort of some other coping strategies, you've talked about the Wellness Action Plan, which I think is a great thing for employers and organisations to take on board. Are there any other sort of work-based coping strategies or approaches that employers may be able to take that support preventing burnout and supporting good mental health in the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a strategy that we focus on, which is called 5 Ways to Wellbeing. And it's 5 different areas that we kind of get people to focus on. So the first is connecting. And it's even just the smallest amount of connection. It could be with family, it could be with friends, but actually within the workplace, it's connecting and having those genuine heartfelt conversations with how people are doing. And just to kind of go back to the point that you raised, yeah, it's having that open culture within the workplace and having people to talk to. And something that is becoming more and more well known as mental health first aid training, and having mental health first aiders in the workplace and choosing the right people to do that, that are happy to have those conversations, but actually that people feel confident to go and talk to. And it's having peer supporters in the workplace as well. So people that may be going through some experiences, or even just talking to someone that you may think will understand where you're at, and maybe experiencing the same stresses, strains and burnout that you might be experiencing. Mm-hmm. But the second one is be active. So it could be physical activity, which is the main thing. And that has a massive impact on people's mental health and their feelings, and it really improves like self-esteem. It burns off that excess of energy, positive or negative, that you might be feeling. But also a lot of people, since they've been working at home, have kind of lost that physical side, and it takes a lot to kind of be back to normal working practices, particularly if you have a physical job. So it's trying to keep up with doing some kind of exercise. And we've been running within Dorset Mind, but there's a lot of initiatives out there. We've been running something called Move Your Mind. Mm-hmm. And it's doing 30 minutes of exercise per day. And it can be an 80s workout. It could be going out for a walk. It could be going out for a run. It could be going and swimming in the sea. I'm not too sure about swimming in the sea when it's freezing cold, but people say the benefits are amazing. So I have said to some of my colleagues, I will try that this year. But things like that, you know, and one of the things about going in the sea, as someone said to me the other day, which was brilliant, he said, when I go in, it's absolutely freezing, but I come out and I feel alive. And all I've done for those few seconds that I'm in the water is really focus on kind of getting through that. And so it's taking your mind off the workplace. It's taking your mind, hopefully, off the stresses and strains and kind of really improving your mental health. Mm-hmm. The third thing that we talk about is taking notice. So paying attention to the world around us. So if you go for a walk, it's actually stopping, looking at the nature around you, listening to the birds, really kind of appreciating the present moment and what we have out there. So it is a struggle at the moment, and it is hard for people. People are getting to the end of the day, especially a work day, and they feel like it's dark. They don't want to go outside. It could be raining, and they really are struggling. But there are ways around it. It's going for a walk before work. Some places have this flexible working policy, so you can go out during the day. You can take that half an hour break during the day when it's still light. I know something for Dorset Mind that we're trying to encourage people to do is take a longer lunch hour. Mm-hmm. Lunch break. And we usually take half an hour, but we've actually decided to do it an hour. And so people can go out for that run at lunchtime when it's still light. They can go for the walk. They can take their dog out. Whatever it is that just really kind of helps them and gives them a break from it. And we've got a couple of other things. So keep learning or learn something new. So really, that's kind of picking up an old hobby that you might have had that you really enjoyed, something creative, learning a new language, anything like that, that just breaks away from like the norm and gives you something else to focus on. And it helps to lift your spirits and your self-esteem. So something that you think you'll enjoy. There's lots of free tasters out there for people to kind of look at. And lastly, it's just giving back. So it doesn't have to be charity work, although obviously volunteering like that is really, really popular and really positive. But it can be simple things like saying thank you each time someone helps you, giving a smile to your neighbour or someone down the road, or even just saying hello to someone that you've passed every day for the past couple of years, but you've never had a conversation with, just saying hello to them. So things like that, that really kind of make a difference. And then just separate to that as well, we talk about mindfulness, and mindfulness is so important, and it's something that I've kind of built into my daily routine, and I feel really lost without it. And it really kind of talks about paying attention to the here and now, and just being more aware of thoughts, feelings, physical sensations, how your body's doing, how your mind's doing. And it's been proven to reduce depression and helps to combat stress and anxiety. I think that hopefully helps and gives you a few coping strategies there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the detail, and talking through some of those strategies there that will be so useful on an individual level, but also hopefully for organisations and businesses, for them to understand that those are important factors, important things to sort of try and embody or demonstrate, lead by example, but also would be really good for organizations to just take some time listening to that and think, how could they bring this into the workplace, whether that is in a remote capacity at the moment or when we return. But like you said, you've mentioned certainly when you talk about those physical initiatives, there's so many wonderful things out there that organizations don't even really need to do the legwork or the brain work of sort of coming up with the concept or the idea. There's so many initiatives out there that really support this at the moment. From a college point of view, we've got a cross college sporting challenge going on at the moment called the Lunar Challenge, and people are getting behind it, and it's so great to see. So there's some really good initiatives that we would encourage people sort of saying, no matter how big or small a business is, to try and get behind and bring into the workplace. So thank you for talking through those strategies and those coping strategies that will support both individuals and employers. And I think it'd be really important now to just go back to a point you've raised, particularly in your sort of five ways to wellbeing, and it's around physical exercise, and you've talked about that, and I liked it because you used the word activity as well. And when I talk about physical exercise, I try to sort of take exercise out of the conversation and call it movement of any type, because I still think exercise has got barriers to some people. And I think it's now more important, being winter, of course, as well, but being so sort of static in our role and restricted, to make sure there's movement of some kind in our day to day. So we do have those initiatives that we can get behind. And there are ways that we do that. And it'd be really good from your point of view to just talk us through how, how physical exercise does contribute to best, you know, better mental health and just the direct correlation that we know it has.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. I am a massive advocate of physical activity. It doesn't have to be exercise. And I'm just going to start that off just by saying it's really funny because my friends kind of say to me and my work colleagues, they laugh because I go to the gym 6 times a week when it's open. But actually, for me, it's about doing the classes. I'm not very good at going to the gym and just actually doing the weights and things like that. But when I have an instructor telling me what to do, I kind of feel like I have to do it.
Yeah.
But what it is as well, it's the social aspect of it. It's a really encouraging place. And I found a great gym for me. The classes are brilliant. I absolutely love them. And I feel so much better afterwards. But also, it's the environment I've had. I've managed to create a lot of friendships out of that. And so for me, especially during lockdown, and the pandemic over the last year, when the gyms managed to be open, it's our social place. It's kind of where we go and socialize at the moment. So I couldn't recommend enough just going and finding a group, finding an activity that you can kind of really take part in, but also kind of meet friends, have a social life and really enjoy it. It's about looking forward to that every day. Physical activity really improves mood. It reduces the stress, it increases self-esteem, but also it manages the symptoms of depression and anxiety. And it's really important to kind of think about how people can take part in physical activity. So what's happened is the entire population has gone into lockdown and living in home confinement for months, which has kind of led to significantly less physical activity. And so that really is affecting people of all ages, genders, ethnicities and people who are working, but also those people who are working and trying to homeschool at the same time. So there's increased demands on people's time being at home, even though we all kind of thought, oh, it's great, I can work from home and I've got lots of extra time. But actually, that's not been the case at all. So we kind of really, we support the kind of physical activity every day notion. So we really kind of think that people should try where possible to do at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity activity. And that can be anything from brisk walking, gentle cycling, tennis, can be things like gardening. It can be, you know, it doesn't have to be physical activity in the traditional sport and exercise sense, which is what you talked about. But also, we kind of encourage people to reduce the time that they spend sitting or lying down and break up that time as well. We find that we're sitting at a desk or we sit in front of the telly a lot more. So it's kind of really thinking, oh, actually, been sitting down for a couple of hours, let me get up and have 5 minutes out and kind of move around for 5 minutes and things like that. But also strengthening activities, so weights, yoga, sit-ups, burpees, Pilates, things like that. But going back to gardening and doing things around the house really do help as well.
Thank you so much. And again, giving some really clear reasons as to why it's so important and the, you know, the correlation it has, but also touching on there of how we've had to adapt, you know, even if you were a gym goer like yourself, or, you know, you were someone who participates in sport, a lot of that's been cancelled, so to speak, for a lot of time in the last 12 months. But actually, it doesn't have to be. It's just about yet again, sort of having to shift focus, adjust and adapt. And there's still so much access out there and initiatives to get behind, things that are online, or like you say, just the movement around the house or in the garden, it just makes such a positive impact, doesn't it, on daily living at the moment, particularly within the confines or the restrictions of a global pandemic and a lockdown. But thank you, Amelia, so much for talking us through some of those coping strategies and suggestions there. And I think just to sort of close, we've talked, you know, about some really key points there. We've talked about some really key statistics that I think are quite eye-opening and shocking in sort of the weight that they hold. But if you could, just to sort of close and summarise and sort of close some of those things off, what would be your, you know, main tips or suggestions moving forward on the back of this conversation for businesses, leaders, managers, whoever it might be, about how they can support wellbeing in the workplace and mental health in the workplace moving forward, but particularly as a result of what we may have reflected on and learned from 2020?
Yeah, no, thank you. I think really for us, in terms of a mental health charity, it goes back to reducing that stigma, kind of opening up those conversations. A key date for us coming up in February, actually in a couple of days' time, is Time to Talk Day, which is on the 4th of February. And it's really the focus this year is about small conversations that actually can make a huge, big impact and change on people's lives. So it's having those little conversations, and it's kind of looking at things like potential triggers of stress. So how long people are working, if they're taking breaks or not, if there's unrealistic expectations or deadlines put on them, high pressure environments, unmanageable workload. So things like that, that kind of is key to come from the management team and the senior leadership teams within those businesses. And I think going back to transparency and kind of really taking that time out and seeing how they can change the shift of mental health and the culture in the workplace. We really promote kind of wellbeing strategies, and we're more than happy to chat through businesses' wellbeing strategies and how they can kind of improve things and how they can introduce things. And I think that's kind of coming down to the training that we offer to businesses. They can be small, they can be large organizations. We've got some really exciting courses that we've just redeveloped and created. So for example, we've got one which is really created due to the impact that the pandemic has had on businesses. So it's called Grief, Loss and Big Change. And whilst it focuses on losing people, it actually has more of a focus on how people have lost what they've been used to and what was normal in their lives just a year ago. And it really kind of focuses on what we talked about earlier. So threat of redundancy, changes in job security, furlough, increased working demand, loneliness and isolation for people in, you know, in their home lives, but also things like childcare provision, changes in education, job insecurity personally, which has an impact on financial security. So really things like that we kind of focus on within our training, but also we're finding at the moment that people are looking for coping strategies and ways to improve their anxiety and kind of reduce that impact of burnout. So we offer a course called Managing Stress, Anxiety and Burnout. And again, that really kind of encourages delegates to look at what's happening for them at the moment, but also their colleagues. And linked to that as well is a course that we call Courageous Conversations. And at the moment, it's developed for people managers, but we're about to introduce one, which is just called Courageous Conversations. And it goes back to talking about mental health and really opening up the conversations and giving people that confidence to check in on someone. And you know, and you touched on that earlier, Natalie, about you can tell if there's something wrong with somebody. You can see it in their face, you can pick it up in their voice. It's quite easy for people to say they're okay when they're not, but actually it's giving those managers and those colleagues confidence to open up the conversation and really check in on people. And you know, what we really, really promote is the fact that we aren't counsellors. We aren't professionals in that field in the workplace. So, yes, there are people who are counsellors and work in that field, but it's about signposting and really showing people where they can get that support if they need it, so they don't go too far down the line and they can kind of pull it back and really focus on positive mental health rather than negative.
Amazing. Thank you. I think, you know, there's an awful lot of advice there and an awful lot of content. And I think Amelia we discovered the first time we met virtually is that we could talk about this subject and all things around it for hours and hours and hours on end. But I'm sure you agree that we hope that just even touching on some of the conversation, exploring some of the strategies, some of the approaches at the moment, if it helps one person or one organisation, then not collectively we've done our job or what we're put out to, you know, what we've gone out to achieve here. There is extensive amount of sort of support and training through Dorset Mind and other initiatives in the local and sort of, you know, on a national level as well. And from a college, you know, we're here to support as well, any training or advice and business conversation. And I think just in sort of summary from me, the main thing we want to try and do from our conversation here is to open up that, you know, that chance to have types of these conversations, because as you mentioned there, with a key date coming up in February, talking is a hugely important thing that we need to try and enable and empower people to do. So I can only thank you, you know, very much for joining me today in sort of being part of us trying to achieve that and trying to sort of share that with our local businesses and organisations. So thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And exactly what you just said, I can talk for hours on mental health and the impact and really how important it is to have those conversations. But I think what people really need to realise is a lot of the support that is out there is about talking, and it's around talking, and it's around opening up. And it's really kind of feeling confident to say, do you know what? I'm not okay. I'm really not okay, and I kind of need some help, because there's incredible services and support out there that people can access. And I think it's really important for people to kind of access those as and when they need to. So thank you ever so much. And yeah, more than happy to continue conversations, you know, with any businesses or any individuals as needed. So
thank you so much, Amelia. Thank you.